Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 53 of Material Issues. I'm Mark Hirschberger of Pop Detective Records, and joining me, I always usually say, from the West Coast, but tonight, he's actually much farther east than I am, live from Leeds, London. It's David Bash of the International Pop Overthrow Festival, my good friend David. How are you feeling tonight, my friend?
I'm feeling really tired, Mark, but very glad to be here. I feel Liverpool will drain a fella.
Yeah.
I don't mean sexually.
But you're all curried up and you're ready to roll.
Yeah. Rena and I had a really nice Indian meal earlier at a restaurant right around the corner from our hotel. Yeah. London is just amazing. Besides, of course, all the history that it has and the beauty of things like the British Museum Buckingham Palace and all that stuff. It has shops everywhere for anything you can think of. Yeah. One thing that I'm amazed at is how many shops now that have American candy. That's what they advertise.
Really?
That's their specialty. Yeah. You'll find Twinkies of different varieties and a bunch of M&Ms and Tootsie Rolls and you name it that isn't generally available here.
Wow.
And of course it's extremely expensive. I almost went for the vanilla fudge ding dongs because we don't have those in California. But it was $17 a box. It was like, no, thanks.
Really? Holy cow.
No, worse. 17 pounds a box. Now we're talking about $22.
Wow.
No, thank you.
No. Now, do they, I haven't been over to the Cavern Club in a number of years, but I always said the few times that I was over, you'd come out of the club late at night and there was never anything to get something to eat right outside the club. And I always said they should have like a sausage sandwich vendor. You'd make $1 million there. Is there anything right outside the club to eat at all?
I could say something crude, but I
would not. I opened the door for you.
There's a lot of activity outside the cavern. Let's leave it at that. But food is not readily available, but there are places not that far. You walk down to the end of Matthew Street and you'll find a few random places open. And then if you go up Church Street, which is where our hotel was, there's a McDonald's and Burger King that are that were open at least till 2:00. I don't know how much further. And then there was another place that served, chicken and pizza and things like that called the F Word that was also open. There are things if you're willing to walk a little while, there are things that are around, but nothing that's I don't think there's any food around outside the cavern. Yeah. There are certainly other clubs, like dance clubs and things right nearby that are open, but that's about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember the dance clubs and everybody in the street.
It's still that way.
gladly in some aspects. Yeah.
I'm not complaining.
But I heard you had a great time at the cavern and you had good crowds and the bands were fantastic. Sounds like a good IPO.
The cavern. Yeah. Well, it really was. And it was extra special this time because we hadn't done it for 3 years. Nobody really knew what to expect in terms of crowds. The crowds at the cavern and most other places in Liverpool hadn't been what they were prior to the pandemic. So there was that concern. The other thing was that we, for the first time at IPO Liverpool, we did not have use of the front stage of the cavern.
Right.
We still had the backstage and we still had the pub across the street. But we didn't have use of the front stage. And I was really concerned going in. I thought, oh, my God, Well, first of all, when we were hit with the news, I'd already overbooked because I thought we had both stages. So by losing one of the stages, we ended up losing about 30 slots. I had booked probably half of those 30. So I had 15 extra bands, and I didn't really know what to do. I mean, I didn't want to pick and choose who could play and who couldn't. So I asked the bands if there were any volunteers to wait till next year. And lo and behold, we got just the right amount. So it worked out. We were able to schedule it without disappointing anyone. But, you know, we did have fewer bands. But honestly, on the whole, I would say it was a blessing in disguise. And here's why. Number one, for Rena and me, we got to see all every band's full set. When we had the front and back stage, you know, we had to be in charge of both of them. Right. So one of us had to be on one stage and the other one on the other. And so while we were patrolling one, we were missing what was going on the other. So consequently, you know, both of us missed parts, sometimes large parts of people's sets. And that was disappointing. The other thing was because, you know, I was doing the introducing and the giving it up. Sometimes, you know, Rena would have to ask a band to wait until I got there to give it up for them or to introduce them. And so we would end up running late quite a bit for that reason. Now, occasionally Rena would give it up for a band, or occasionally she'd introduce one, because things just got so out of whack in terms of the coordination between stages. So we didn't have to worry about that anymore. Right. So those were good things. The other thing was, it was, you know, a lot less stressful to have to run one stage than it was to run two. So that felt good. It was much more relaxing. The other thing was, for the first time, I was able to use my laptop, which is very, very helpful. Number one, it's a lot easier to type on a laptop than it is, at least especially for me, on an iPhone. So I would take videos with the iPhone, and then I would, you know, I would write some descriptions of the video, of the bands in the videos. And if I had my phone, it would have taken me like 10 minutes to write two sentences. That's how bad I am on that phone. But with a laptop, you know, just there. Also, it just helped me do some work. You know, other IPOs are going on in a couple of months, and I hear from bands, and, you know, instead of having to wait to get back to the hotel, I could do things in real time, which was very helpful.
Right. Was the front stage? I know that they reserved the front stage for more Beatle type acts. Do you think you had a good bleed over from people, tourists and whatnot, that came down to see Beatles acts and then came back?
I would say almost definitely. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, what people came in for. It was very clear certain people came for IPO. We had our regulars.
Right.
We had other people who came up to us and said that they had read about it and came in. But I think it's pretty clear that there were people who had come in for the Beatles stuff and decided to wander over. I think some of them were even more impressed with our stuff than theirs. And actually, I should qualify it, because one of the acts on the front stage did that on Facebook. It's not all Beatle acts per se. I mean, it's pretty much all cover stuff, but some of them do, you know, just classic songs from the 70s and 80s and 60s and 80s that aren't Beatles. But I don't think there's any original music on there. Rena's emphatically saying no in the background.
The front stage panders to the tourist trade, which is, you know, let's face it, that's how the Cavern earns the bulk of their money, is they are a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
They also do live music.
And they were very upfront about that. They said, you know, we need to have the front stage from now on. To do the cover stuff, because that is what attracts the tourists. And I mean, it makes sense. But it just, I don't know, every time, and I'm not putting people down who go to see Beatles or any other cover bands. I mean, when they're good, it's a really fun experience. But it's like I would wander. Occasionally I'd have to go upstairs for, you know, for this or that. And I'd wander past the front stage, and I'd hear people singing along to Beatles songs, like, hey, you know, the refrain of Hey Jude or whatever. And it reminded me of that movie Threads in the 80s. Do you remember that? Yeah. One of the scariest movies I've ever seen, about an aftermath, appropriately enough, of a nuclear holocaust in the UK. And almost everything got destroyed, but there were a few things that actually still sort of worked. And one was, I think, some sort of projector.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, I think there was just one movie or one show or whatever that was left, and that's all the people could watch.
Yeah.
And you could see them all, you could see it by rote, them every time they'd watch it, they'd mouth all the words because they'd seen it like 1,000 times. And I always get that feeling when I see people watch the Beatles cover act. I'm thinking, come on, come over to, I mean, no disrespect, trust me.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, come on over to our side and try something different. You know, maybe you'd like it.
Yeah.
But you know, who knows? A lot of them are older, and it would probably be a little bit too loud for them. I mean, I should also qualify that the cover acts are usually just one person.
They're usually one person, but I mean, and most of them do have excellent voices.
No doubt, they're very talented.
Really good.
No, but they're very talented. But it would be too loud. Our stuff, even if they liked it, most of it would be too loud for those
people. Yeah, it's like going down and seeing a live jukebox. In some ways, it's familiar, it's comfortable. You get something to drink, see the Cavern. It makes sense that the Cavern is going to, you know, make their cash off of that, promote that. That's what they want.
At this point, I'm very happy for them to do that. We did the front stage along with the back for 17 years. If they want to keep it for their acts, you know, from now on, that's totally fine.
I think the conversation we had with the owners of the Cavern at the end kind of summed it up best, is that, you know, this way it's like the best of both worlds, is that they're supporting live original music without interfering with their bread and butter of what they do for the entire rest of the year.
Right. Yeah.
Right. IPO, and they've been very, forthcoming about this. IPO is very important to them because they don't want to lose their connection to live original, you know, modern music.
Right.
They don't only want to be thought of as a band catering to Beatles and Beatle acts and classic songs. You know, they want to be both. I mean, yeah, we know that the tourist trade is the Beatles stuff, but they, you know, we help them stay vital.
Right.
Rather than just be a relic.
No, it makes sense. Makes perfect sense. And you had the Cavern pub across the street.
We did have the pub, and things went very well. You know, one of the things that's always cool is, you know, most people come for the Cavern Club, of course, and a lot of them don't know, unless they've played IPO before or they're local, they don't know about the pub. Mm-hmm. You know, they may know it exists, but they don't know the experience that bands have in there. And then once they've done their set, you know, sometimes we'll hear like, yeah, our set at the Cavern Pub was even better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the people are right on top of you almost. And so you get that intimate experience. And when they love you, you know it.
Yeah.
No doubt. So,
plus there's all the memorabilia like right surrounding you on that stage, you know, in the club, it's in little alcoves off to the side. The memorabilia isn't like right there, right where you're playing, but in the pub, it's kind of up on the wall behind you. It's like right there.
Even on the front stage where, you know, as you know, there is a, you know, more memorabilia than there is on the backstage, but it's not staring you right in the face like it does at the pub.
Right. Yeah.
You get more of a Beatles sense in a way, playing at the pub. So, it becomes a big value added for a lot of the bands who, you know, figured, it's just another venue. Now they realize that it's more than that. So we still have the pub, and, you know, To be able to offer bands two slots or maybe even more if we have cancellations, that's a value added, no doubt.
Sure, yeah.
But we saw a lot of great bands this year. And I mean, you know, we always see a lot of great bands, but And maybe because it had been 3 years, but it just seemed like the quality level was higher than it's ever been.
There was also a lot of camaraderie among the bands and the fans, and just everybody was so thankful to get a sense of normalcy and to be able to interact with people again.
I think Rena's hit on something, because I think the camaraderie was even greater than it ever has been, because people hadn't played. Some people had not done any shows since pre-pandemic.
Right.
Others, even if they hadn't been out of their general area before pre-pandemic. And so now you have this event that's uniting, the world of pop music, and you've got these people from different countries getting together and interacting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was even more special for them because they just hadn't done anything like that for a while.
Right. Yeah. No, that's very.
We had tourists from Chicago who randomly wandered in and saw a band from Chicago play.
Yeah. You get those little mini events kind of that take place, mini experiences that people tell you about and you remember. But this is something that I wanted to tell you because I didn't know about this until a few days ago. And this is probably the most special thing that I've ever heard about IPO Liverpool. And Rena knows what I'm going to say, I think, or maybe you don't. I've spoken about Jean Catherall many times. She's the lady who, pretty much got us in. I shouldn't even say pretty much. She got us in with the Cavern in 2003. She had called me. She had heard about the festival. She asked me a lot of questions. She asked and when I answered them, she said, "Have you thought about doing it in Liverpool?" And I said, "Well, not really." And she said, "Have you thought about the Cavern Club?" And you could have knocked me over with a feather, right? Of course. I said, God, we'd love that. And she said, "Leave it with me. I'll be back with you in a couple of days." And she got back with me, sure enough, and said they want to do it. So I was thrilled. Both of us were. But Bill Heckel, the owner of the Cavern, and I can say this because he would be, he would freely admit this. He was skeptical, mm-hmm. even though he trusted Gene. He was taking a big chance. He gave us 7 days of this venue that generally brings in a good deal of revenue. He gave it to something that he had no idea what he told Gene, "I've never heard of this thing. I've never heard of any of the bands. What makes you think this is going to work?" And she just said, "Trust me, I have a good feeling about it."
Right.
Anyway, he remains skeptical. We get there. This is October of 2003. We started in October, and he didn't come down to the opening day, but Gene did, and also one of his employees, Neil Brannon, did. And they're watching this, and they, they see bands coming in and out like clockwork. They see that the quality level is really high. They see the response from the crowd is really positive. And Neil is just absolutely amazed. And I didn't know about this until, like I said, we had dinner with Gene a few nights ago. She told us. Neil called Bill Heckel, the owner, and he said, "Bill, get down here right now." And Bill said, "What? What's going on?" He said, "Just get here as soon as you can."
Right.
So Bill, of course, is like, he's concerned. I mean, what happened? Is there some disaster? Did something blow up? Was there a huge fight and the police had to come in? What? So he gets there and, he comes down the stairs and he sees them and he says, "What? What?" And Neil says, "Bill, take a look at what's going on here." He said, "I have never seen this kind of energy at this club."
Right.
Ever. And how flattering how flattering was that?
Sure. Yeah.
The idea that, And I mean, they've only owned the club since the 90s. Granted, they weren't here, of course, when the Beatles, they weren't there when the Beatles were, but still, right. To be able to say that, and mean it. And Bill was very impressed. He couldn't believe it. You know, he was one of the things he was concerned about was, you know, the organization. How's he getting all these bands in here to, you know, to number one, to actually show up, and number two, to go on time, and number three, to be good. How is he possibly doing that?
Right, right.
So he was shocked at all of this. He couldn't believe it. And he said to Gene, "You were right." You know, she, of course, felt very vindicated when he
sure.
said that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It really is. I you know, again, I didn't know that until recently. And wow, I mean, what a compliment that,
sure.
that is. And I think it's because of stuff like that he moved us from October to May, which is a much better time.
Better month, yeah.
Gave us more dates. And, you know, in 2005, 2006, we used a lot of other venues along with the Cavern. We were able to invite a lot more bands. So, yeah, he got others involved, and it, I mean, it's just been great. I can't imagine, you know, not coming here every year.
Well, it's very iconic. You know, the venue's iconic, the city's iconic, and then to be able to be not only to do it once, but to do it for how many years have you done it now?
This was our 18th.
18 years is mind blowing in and of itself. You know, that's incredible. That's incredible. So
it is. You always talk about things, you know, that you would never believe would happen to you later on in life. And this is certainly up, probably number one for me, that I could never have imagined anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just so great that Rena has been part of it the whole time. And I mean, she's a very big part of it. I can't overestimate how important she is to IPO, especially IPO Liverpool. She does so much work in finding bands. I mean, you know, she knows my taste, and she has way more patience than I do. So she'll go online, she'll search through the morass, and you know, she may listen to 100 bands, and she's, you know, she'll only find maybe 15 or 20 that she thinks I'm going to like, or that she likes. And then, you know, then I audition them, and we decide mutually, like, which ones we should invite.
Right.
But, you know, I would not have the patience to go through all of that. I mean, you know, if bands contact me cold, I have no problem going through their music. Oh, excuse me.
Bless you.
But to actually go through, you know, random searches like she does, it's amazing. Plus, you know, she ran the merchandise table
right
the whole time. And, you know, we had a merchandise person for several years prior to that. And unfortunately, as the years went by, he just seemed to get more and more depressed. And that manifested in him getting sleepier and stinkier, unfortunately. Just stop bathing. And you know, I get the and he was sullen, you know, the whole time. You know, he virtually never smiled. You know, most of the time he was you know, he was just sitting at the table kind of looking down. It had to be disconcerting for people wanting to buy stuff.
Yeah.
But this year we had Rena running the merch table, and she's very cheerful, and she's very efficient, and you know, people remarked that it was a great experience having her run the table.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that as well. I mean, obviously, I'm grateful that she's in my life to begin with, but having her be as big a part of IPO, I mean, you know, I would, if for some reason she couldn't come to IPO Liverpool, I'd still do it, but it just wouldn't be the same experience. It wouldn't be as good. No way.
There you go. And how were merch sales this year?
Actually really good. It's hard to compare how they were in past years because Rena wasn't running the merchandise table. But do you get a sense that they were better?
I get a sense that they were better. There were a very small number of bands who had merch on the table who didn't sell anything, and mostly that was because, you know, their albums had been out for a while, so that people right. who really wanted them had already gotten them.
That's
online.
A good point. Yeah.
But most bands who had stuff on the table sold something.
No, that's cool. No, that's good. Yeah. And I hear the IPO t-shirts went well.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a very important, factor. It's a revenue that is necessary for us to pay expenses. Mm-hmm. We take pride in the shirts. Steve Stanley's a great graphic artist, and he did a wonderful job this year. And yeah, I mean, as you may remember, I'm on stage quite often trying to hawk the t-shirts. I don't know if you ever saw that caricature that one of the bands a few years ago, one of the guys was an artist, and he did a caricature of me and Rena. And it's me kind of with a stupid grin on my face holding the shirt like this. Right. And Rena standing there holding, you know, she used to, you know, walk around with the schedule and what city the artists were from, because just in case I forgot. So she was doing that in the picture. I'll send it to you. It's really good. It must have been around 2016 when I lost all that weight and before I put it, most of it back on. That's why I haven't shown it recently, because I'm too thin in it. But anyway, that's cool. So yeah, I do make an effort to sell the shirts. Yeah. And, a lot of band members bought them, and a lot of just random, you know, spectators did. Mm-hmm. It's great cool. when there's a nice. It's great when there's a nice mix like that.
Right.
We sold almost all of them.
That's it's awesome.
Yeah, and of course we have one with your name on it. Not literally, but I will be sending it to you.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. Well, it sounds like this year was really top notch in many, many ways, and I just tuned you up for. You know, more IPOs the rest of this year, and then back at Liverpool again next year. So, you're back on the horse. You know?
Well, another cool thing was we went to the Cavern offices the day after we were done, and you could tell they were very happy.
Right.
They could not wait to put next year's dates in their diary.
And neither could we, to be honest.
Well, no, we never. I mean, you know, I have no mystique about me. As you know, I'm an open book. I mean, some people still see one in me because if they don't know me very well, but if I'm excited about something, I'm going to come out and say it. I'm not going to act cool. I'm not going to act cool and, you know, unflappable, because I'm very flappable. But sometimes if you're doing business with people, they like to act like you need them more than they need you.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to rank who needs who more or less, but it was very clear that the Cavern wanted us back.
Yeah.
We're grateful. Look, we're really humbled to be part of this venue's history.
Yeah.
Not just the Beatles connection, but everything else that they've done and who they've had. It's mind-boggling in a way that we're part of it.
Well, word has it that when you finish your 20th IPO there, they're going to ask you for your hat so they can put it in a display.
You know what?
I didn't want to break the news. I wanted it to be a surprise, but I think that's what they're talking about.
If they were really doing that, I would give it to them.
It could be in a case next to the case with, you know, the Rolling Stones gear and the Beatles. Sure, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Right, yes, that's right. Next to Keith Richards' guitar, we'll have David.
What Bash. I'd like to see is like at the very last band at the last show after your 20th year is that the owner of the Cavern walks on stage, asks for your hat and the paisley shirt that you're wearing, so you stand. You're left standing on the stage topless.
Oh, geez. I better lose some weight then. Nobody wants to see that.
It's funny, but it would be kind of nice to have a little plaque there or something, right?
We do have a plaque, actually.
You do have a plaque, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
They gave us a plaque after our 15th year.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, I remember that.
Just before we started in year 15, Bill Heckel went up on stage and told the crowd about IPO and who we were and that we'd been there now for 15 years. And, you know, he wanted to acknowledge that, and he showed everyone the plaque.
I remember that. I remember you told me that. Darn it.
Yeah, and it's hanging right outside the backstage entrance.
That's cool.
The wall directly to the left, just as you pass the old style telephone.
Yep.
Telephone booth, I mean. There's some stuff on the wall, including that plaque.
Awesome.
And I have a replica of the plaque hanging in my office. So that's really we wanted to be on the Walk of Fame, but they wouldn't, you know, they only put bands up there.
Yeah.
So the next best thing was the plaque. So, you know, we're grateful. Maybe we'll get another one for the 20th. You know, maybe they'll hold out until the 25th.
Or maybe they'll put your hat in a display case.
Maybe they'll put my hat in a display case.
I love it.
They probably won't do that until I die. So I'll never be able to do it. you'll have to mail them the hat after I die.
Yeah, you can put that in your will. Will your hat to the cavern.
Hey, if they want it, they're getting it.
It sounds like it was completely positive. That's wonderful.
No, it was a great experience. And of course, ancillary to that is the record shopping that, of course, we do as much of as we can in Liverpool and in Manchester.
Right.
But as a value added this year, and this was way more critical than it had been pre-pandemic, because shipping prices have just gone through the roof. I'd be looking on Discogs or eBay for different albums, a lot of UK albums, original pressings and things like that. And, you know, some of them were very expensive and some of them weren't. And it just looked so incongruous. You'd have a record that was selling for £5 at, you know, plus £20 shipping.
Right. Yeah.
They're paying £25 for a £5 record. In the past, the shipping may have been £4.
Right.
But, you know, once COVID hit, everything went through the roof. And there's no, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's going to stay that way. Even once we're completely free of this, it's still going to stay up there, because, you know, you've never seen gas prices come down back to a dollar. It's, you know, it's not happening. Yeah. And shipping prices, especially overseas, are just not going to come down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this time I felt a great need to, once I got to the UK, to start buying some stuff on Discogs that otherwise would have, you know, well, and I should say, not only cost more shipping, but you have to wait a lot longer than you used to also. Mm-hmm. It used to be that if somebody sent something from the UK, you were pretty sure you'd get it within 7 or 10 days. Now, you know, it may take 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It may take longer than that. Not just the UK, but other European countries. I had a band send me an LP. I think a month later, it finally arrived. Yeah. I mean, that was never the case. It's just, you know, it's the new regime in the postal world that's caused it. But so I did order a few things from Discogs that I probably wouldn't have had I stayed home, and along with doing some record shopping. So I'm going to show you a few things that I got.
Cool.
That I've been really, really looking forward to. Here's one of them, and this is probably the coolest thing. What am I doing? All right. This is a band from Singapore called The Quests from the late 60s.
Wow.
33rd Revolution is the name of the album. And if you look at the guys, they kind of have stupid looking grins on their faces, but they're wearing cool clothes.
Right.
And this album is full of covers, which generally turns me off, but they do some really, you know, obscure but cool stuff. Like, they do a cover of Never Ever, which was a song the Action The British mod band, you know, made famous in the 60s. Mr. Rainbow, which is one of the coolest sunshine pop songs by Steve Flynn, who I think might be Keith West, actually. I'm not sure. They do a cover of What's Wrong with the Way I Live, which the Hollies did. A really cool song. And believe it or not, they do a psychedelic instrumental version of Hava Nagila. this is a really rare record. I've never seen one anywhere other than eBay.
Now,
it's even impossible to get in Singapore. But guy in the UK had it, and he was able to send it to my Liverpool hotel.
Wow.
And so I got it.
That's amazing.
I'll tell you that much. But it's RAF, as I mentioned on on Facebook. That's rare as beep.
Yeah.
And it really is.
It's amazing that you even came across that on Discogs, right?
It really is. I've talked to people from Singapore and they say they've never seen it. I mean, they did some CD compilations on the Quest in the early 2000s. Those are gone also.
Right.
Yeah. I really want volume 2 because it has stuff like this and more. And I haven't seen one on Discogs for years.
That's so amazing.
Who knows when? I mean, I talked to my friend in Singapore. Can you get that for me? No, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So this band is very obscure. I informed Andy Morton from Shindig about them, and I'm really hoping that someone there does an article on this band.
Where are they from?
Singapore.
Oh, they're from Singapore.
Yeah, they are Singapore's best, maybe only psychedelic band. I don't know.
Wow.
So yeah, it's pretty cool.
That would make for a good future material issues episode. Let's find one of those band members and say, WTF, what's going on with this stuff?
You know what? That's certainly a possibility. I don't know if their names are on here, but they're not. But I'm sure, I'm sure a little research would reveal who's in the band.
Yeah.
Like I said, these are all covers, so I don't see any. I don't see any songwriting credits that would be from band members.
Interesting.
So anyway, we'll find it. Yeah. We'll find them. Now you've inspired me to go look. A band that I really love, and I'm pretty sure you like them a lot too, is Supergrass.
Oh yeah.
I think they're power pop. Some people disagree with me. I mean, it doesn't sound like Badfinger or the Raspberries, to be sure, but power pop evolves like anything else. It's louder, it's faster, but it's got the hooks, it's got the melodies. I can't really call it rock because its structure is more in the power pop vein.
Right.
I love this band to pieces. One of the best shows I've ever seen was Supergrass at the Roxy. I think it was on their third album tour in 1999. I could not believe how powerful, how intense, and how well they perform those songs.
Wow.
So they've become, among my favorite bands. And one of the things I really wanted to acquire was their original LPs because, LPs from the late 90s, well, they're non-existent in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And in the U.K., there were very, very few made. I mean, by that point, the CD had completely entrenched in our buying, and vinyl was pretty all but done.
Right.
So these are really rare. I finally found the first album in an Atlanta record store, and it wasn't cheap there. These were even more expensive, but I'm really, really happy that I was able to find them. One on Discogs, which is the second album, we're only in it for the money. No, in it for the money. I'm thinking of Frank Zappa now.
Right,
this one seems to be the favorite of a lot of people who love Supergrass. It's probably my second favorite. It's great. And this is, of course, another very rare record. Not in the best condition, but not in the worst either. I mean, I don't know that I'm planning on playing these. I mean, I might once just to see what they sound like. But, I've got the CDs. I've got reissue vinyl. I've got the box set, I've got it all. But the one thing I didn't have was original pressing. So here's that. And then even better, my favorite album, the third one, I found on eBay. And this is pristine. This is absolutely, it's you know, it's almost mint. It's probably mint minus. And it's got the original poster, also in great shape. This is rarer than even the second one. This is probably the rarest one. But, you know, it's got two of my favorite songs of theirs, Moving and Pumping on Your Stereo. And it's mainly for those two songs that this is my favorite album of theirs. Right. Those two are just unreal.
Well, let me follow up a question with that, because you and I talk about collecting all the time and the psychology of collecting. So you love the band. You've got everything probably digitally, whether it be on CD or MP3 or whatever it may be. So you've got all the songs, and you're more of a CD guy, you know, as far as that's concerned. Why the need to have the vinyl? Just because it's rare and you can say you have it?
That's certainly part of the attraction. I can't deny that. I like, I take pride in having, you know, some of the rarer records. Unfortunately, in 1993, I sold a great deal of vinyl because I was converting to CD. I got rid of some extremely rare records, like an original Ivy's album, Bowie drag cover. I had a promo picture sleeve of Stairway to Heaven, which is really hard to find. I had tons and tons of stuff, and, you know, some less obscure things, but now worth much more money. Right. And I got rid of it all, almost all. I didn't get rid of things that weren't on CD at that time. If I liked them a lot, I kept them.
Right.
But everything else just went. And, I've regretted it ever since. And I've bought back some of the stuff I've gotten rid of. But others are just, you can't even find.
So do you think you do it to ease your deep-seated regret of getting rid of some of that stuff? Is it the rarity of... Because as you mentioned, I may not play it. I may play it one time to hear what it sounds like. So it's not because you want to listen to the vinyl. It's because you got to have the rarity of it. You got to replace something or feed something inside you that says I have to have. I'm the same way with the new music vinyl, the brand new reissue. Well done. You know, I didn't have to have all three of those vinyl, because I've got everything on CD. I mean, I've got it all dumped to my MP3 player. I don't need to, and I don't even know if I'll open them up. you know what I mean?
No doubt. Look, but, I've always been a collector of stuff.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I collected. Excuse me. When I was a child, I collected coins. I collected pens. I still collect pens. In fact, I've got here my Mont Blanc JFK. I didn't have that back in the 60s. JFK was dead, but there was no Mont Blanc and there was no JFK pen. And I mean, it would have taken about 7 years of allowance to even put a down payment down on this. But I still love pens. But back then, I had my Parkers, I had my Papermates, I had my Schaefers, I had my Bics, you know, stuff like that. I collected radios whenever I could get a hold of one. I've always been a collector. I was late to the table with records, actually.
And speaking of just pens and collectors, have you ever picked up any retro 51 pens?
No, I don't even know what they are.
They make all these really cool, they're called retro 51. I've got a few of these because you and I, for some reason, seem to collect a lot of the same stuff. And I didn't know anything about your pen collection, but here's Retro 51. And this one's called a Tornado Retro 51. And you take everything off here.
Wow.
And it's got all neat stuff. But the pen is just a candy apple red roller ball pen.
Oh, nice. Is that that looks like a ballpoint.
No, it's a rollerball.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's a rollerball. But they come in these roll, and they've got all sorts of neat retro based pens. Could be graphic oriented all over the pen, James Dean models. things like that, but they're very cool. Retro 51.
Well, I like the packaging. The packaging is extremely cool. Is there anything on the pen that indicates that it's from, that it's part of the Retro 51 line?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole, it's hard to see, but there's an engraving that goes all the way around the band.
Oh, okay.
That says Tornado Retro 51.
Why Tornado?
Tornado is just the model of the pen. So okay. Tornado is this pen, but it'll come in various colors as far as the barrel is concerned. But they've got a whole line of different retro oriented pen designs.
No, which one? And, I thought I saw Marilyn Monroe on that one.
No, it's not Marilyn Monroe, but it's a very 50s almost Grace Kelly looking.
Yeah. So it's just a model, not
a anybody. Model.
Yeah.
Fine writing instruments since 1990. So they started in 1990.
Totally unfamiliar.
Yeah. Life is too short to carry an ugly pen. That's their motto.
I couldn't agree more.
So there you go. Now we're talking pens on Material Issues.
And you know, you're a little fuzzy now, Mark.
No, that's just me. I'm not feeling well. So I'm on it.
Still
it'll
fuzzy.
It'll come back.
Okay, yes. You're back. Yeah, you talk about things that we both collect, and it's funny. I happen to have with me, Rena thought I was absolutely nuts bringing these, but I did it anyway. Right before I left, I got my Topps 2022 Heritage Purple set.
Wow.
So this is the Wander Franco card, which is going for a decent amount of money because every one of his cards are. And I love, you know, I love the variants on, I mean, I love Heritage cards a lot. Yeah. They're my favorite cards. For those who don't know, the Heritage cards take the design from a Topps design from an older year.
Right.
And put modern players on them. So this is what the 1973 cards look like, although they weren't purple.
Right.
Because this is just a purple variation on the set. The 2022 set, which uses the 73 design, is absolutely beautiful. I don't have the standard set with me, but I have the purple. The purple only has 100 cards.
Wow.
While the standard set is 500. But there are also variations that come in red, in green, and gold, and black. But those sets, they're much rarer. I have not seen sets on any of those.
Yeah.
And I should point out that the sets, there are no pre-made sets. The way people make them is they buy boxes and boxes.
Right.
And they put the sets together.
Put their sets
purple
together.
Purple is the most common of the color variants. So people have been able to put purple sets together. But anything beyond that, I've not seen. And they would go for four figures easy if they did exist. So anyway. So, yeah, I even brought some baseball cards with me.
Which is funny. When we talk about baseball and collecting, you know, you and I both growing up, you know, the only way you put a set together was to go to your store, get the packages, keep opening up, and hoping that you get. And then there was at some point, I don't know what year they started, but I remember my parents for Christmas buying me the complete set of whatever, year it might have started 70
82 or 83.
Was it 82 or 83?
I should actually know this, but it's one of those 2 years where they started doing factory sets. There was such a demand for sets by that point that Topps finally acquiesced and put together factory sets and sold them that way. Actually, prior to that, you could get complete sets, but you had to know someone there.
Yeah, wow.
So if you had a connection to Topps, I remember. I think it was even, you know, Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner of baseball at the time, would have to contact Topps and, you know, really cajole them into putting complete sets together for them. But yeah, as you mentioned, the only other way was to just buy packs of cards and hopefully hope you came up with every one of them so that you could put your set together.
And even just mentioning that, I just got a whiff of the bubblegum smell right. in my nose. It's amazing how you can think of a memory and I could even turn on the olfactory senses. I just got a whiff in my nose of opening that pack up and smelling that bubblegum. Holy cow.
Sense of smell is the strongest memory sense that one has. So
yeah, it's amazing.
I'm not too surprised.
Oh, I can walk by. I mean, one of my first real girlfriends in high school, like, you know, someone that you went out with more than just once or whatever, a girlfriend.
Yeah.
She used that shampoo. Gee, your hair smells terrific.
Oh, yeah.
And gee, did her hair smell terrific. And they don't make that shampoo anymore today, but there's certain smells that are close. Like, I'll be near a woman or something, and I'll go.
And you'll get arrested.
Yes.
Can I sniff you, please?
Yes. And I'm up there sniffing her hair. But I actually did that, trying not to be too weird, but I smelled, someone went by me. I said, pardon me. And I said, do you mind if I just, you know, and she didn't mind. And the smell, it just took me right back to, gee, your hair smells terrific.
Did you tell her that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She laughed. She didn't. She was younger. I mean, not younger, but she didn't know the shampoo. But I explained to her, this was what my early high school girlfriend used in her hair. And with one of your first real girlfriends, you remember that kind of stuff. And
oh, no doubt.
Man, oh, man. Big time. Wow.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm going to have to. Excuse me a second. I'm just going to go take a shower real quick.
Yeah, right. Come back. Let me just talk about a few more records that I got. Don't mean to hog the whole show today, but new reissue of Mummer by XTC, and if you don't recognize the cover as what is standard for Mummer, this was the original intended artwork.
Right.
I don't know the full story of why it wasn't ultimately used, but it wasn't. So this reissue has the full artwork, the original artwork. It's 180 grams. And this is an album that's somewhat overlooked in XTC's canon, but, you know, Love on a Farm Boy's Wages, Great Fire, Funk Papa Roll. It's a really good record.
Who put that out?
Is
that on Andy's label, or did somebody else put that out?
No, it's on Andy's label.
Okay.
I love Ape House. I love their logo. And it's like almost anything they put out, I'll buy just because I want to support Andy Partridge. What can I?
I got a couple of the Ape House T-shirts. Are some of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have those now. I need to get one. this is a Nirvana album, but it's not that Nirvana.
It's the original Nirvana.
Not that I have anything against that Nirvana. They're fine, but I like this Nirvana better. It's a UK band from the late '60s. Didn't have any hits really. And certainly never broke in the States. Although their first album was released on Bell Records in the U.S., nobody bought it. And not too many people bought their albums in the U.K. either. But this was a previously unreleased record from near the time they first broke up in 72. It was part of the Nirvana box set that Madfish put out last year and that I did get. In fact, this was really cool. Madfish, which is a label from the Netherlands, they actually sent me the whole box for free because I was going to review it, and I did review it. Madfish put out a Caravan box set a few months later with like 37 CDs in it.
Wow.
The Nirvana box was all LPs, and I was waiting for reissues on LP reissues. They had not come until that box. But anyway, the big enticement of the box was that it included this record, which had never come out in any form. And for Record Store Day, it came out individually. So I just wanted something apart from the box set. So
Now, how are the graphics on something that size? Because I always am amazed when they do reissues of something that came out late 60s, early 70s. How they got their hands on the artwork or how they digitally do it. And sometimes you look at these album covers and you can tell it's not very well reproduced because they just couldn't do it. You scan it, do your best.
Yeah.
you know.
Well, as I said, this one was previously unreleased, so there's no basis for comparison.
Right, okay.
It looks pretty good. I mean, yeah, as you know, reissues come in varying degrees of quality. Some of them are done on the cheap, and it just looks like almost a mimeograph copy of a record, and it looks awful. I mean, I could name a few labels, but that sometimes do that, but I won't. Friday Music.
We'll beep that out for the
And then there are others who, you know, obviously put the time, effort, and the money into doing just fabulous recreations,
right,
where they digitally restore the original artwork, and it looks great, and they cost more, and sometimes people complain about that, but you know, if you want quality, you got to pay for it.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and to be sure, the price of vinyl has gone out of control. But, you know, sometimes if you're a collector like me, sometimes you just need to have this stuff. So you pay.
Well, and some of these are so very well done. And, you know, like we mentioned early on, the three new music albums reissue are just so well done. God, I mean, they're great. Really well. I mean, you could tell they took a lot of care and spent a lot of money, and that's why you want to support these kind of things. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of one that's fairly well done, this is another. And I should say the Nirvana was a UK record store day one, and that's why it never made it to the States. So I had to find it out here, and I couldn't find it in any store. So this was another thing that I got on eBay that was sent to my hotel. And again, just saved all kinds of shipping.
Sure.
Which is wonderful. Most people know the band Slade, or at least most of our people. What they may not know is that prior to Slade, they were known as Ambrose Slade.
Yep.
And released this album called Ballsy, and it was only released in the U.S. at the time on Mercury Records. And, you know, it's not glam. There wasn't glam in the late 60s yet, but it's really good UK pop. Naughty Holder and co-writes a few of the songs on here. And they also do a couple of covers, like Knocking Nails Into My House, an Idle Race song. They do a Zappa song, Ain't Got No Heart. They do If This World Were Mine, which is a Marvin Gaye track. They do a nice cover of Martha, My Dear. Journey to the Center of Your Mind. So it's probably about 40% originals and 60% covers, but really well done.
Yeah.
Holder doesn't sing quite the way he ended up singing in Slade. He's not screaming at the top of his lungs. This is a really good record, and it never come out in the UK until now for Record Store Day. So I picked that up.
That's very cool.
Let's see what else we got here. Now here's something I posted on Facebook. There's a band from Cardiff called Buzzard, Buzzard, Buzzard.
Right.
Not the greatest name in the world. It's a little. It doesn't flow off the tongue too well, but I really like this band. I heard about them earlier this year. Unfortunately, I heard about them a little bit too late to get them for IPO. They now, you know, they've got a big buzzard.
Yeah,
and they've got management, and you know, once the band gets management, the managers never want them to play things like this.
Sure.
You know, the managers, you know, they want big money. So anyway, I went to Jacaranda Records in Liverpool, which is associated with the club that the Beatles played in really early on in their career. And I guess Buzzard times three. Came up to Liverpool and did an in-store there, and they signed copies of their record.
That's cool.
I saw this signed copy, and I said, you know what? What the hell? Let me get this. I'm not really much into autographs in general, but, you know, this is an up-and-coming band. It'd be kind of cool to have this. So I picked this one up. I highly recommend to every pop fan that I know. If you're a Jellyfish fan, for example, you'll probably dig these guys. They're not quite as elaborate or ornate as Jellyfish, but they've got some similar melodies, a lot of really cool upbeat stuff. The lead singer's very competent. It's good stuff. It's come out on CD as well, but not easy to get in the US, which again was never, it never used to be a concern. You would just order from Amazon UK, and you know, maybe the shipping would be a little bit more, but now it's a lot more, and So it's like now people really wait until it gets to the U.S. But normally, if you order through Amazon U.S., you're still going to pay U.K. shipping prices because that's where they're getting them. They're That's another consequence of COVID, that Amazon and Amazon UK are just not housing as much stuff. They, you know, when they were locked down, they had to start laying off employees, and they haven't replenished. So consequently, they don't house as much stuff because they don't have enough employees to get that stuff out of there. So
now I'll tell you another positive consequence for those who are looking for things that are hard to find is that I've found that there's more people listing stuff on eBay because they're trying to sell things because they unfortunately may need the money or whatever it may be. But I've picked up just looking here close to my right hand, I picked up a whole bunch of dodgy material, which was generally not that easy on eBay. And I mean dirt cheap. And a band that I had found out about, I don't know whether I have them here, but called Shaq.
Oh yeah, you were telling me about Shaq.
And I picked up I guess
Liverpool band.
Three albums, and one of them very difficult to find, but they were all on they were all on eBay, relatively inexpensive. And if they all came from the same person, then it, you know, they combined the shipping into one package.
Right.
So that's been kind of a positive, a positive outcome for that kind of thing. So, you know.
Oh yeah, no,
both
no,
sides
no
of the coin
about it. Yeah. Let me just show two CD things that I got. This has definitely been way more of a vinyl trip. I mean, thankfully I got CDs from a lot of the bands who played IPO. That's always really nice. But as far as purchases go, it's mostly been vinyl. But I did certainly want to get this when I saw it. The Suzy Quatro box set.
Nice.
Which has everything she did from 73 to 79. It's called the Rock Box.
Yep.
And it's amazing. I find it amazing that she never made it in the States.
Not even with the Happy Days exposure, you know?
Yeah, the Happy Days exposure. Don't get me started on that.
I'm just saying, not even.
Nothing at all. No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine, but when you know she's leather Tuscadero, she's got the band Leather and the Suede, and they do a version of Devil Great Gate Drive, a song which of course could never have really come out in the 50s.
Yeah.
Even though it's 50s inspired, nobody was doing anything like that. And you know, in the original version, which was number one in the UK by Suzy Quatro, she says, "Let's do it one time for Suzy." On the Happy Days version, "Let's do it one time for Leather." I wanted to gag when I heard that. But you know, whatever. I guess, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you would think that would have gotten her some exposure. It would have.
You would have thought
people might have gone out and bought Devil Gate Drive, but
no. I think she was another one of those artists that was just wrong style at the wrong time. And you know, had she been, you know, a little earlier, maybe tad bit later, I just think it was timing.
Well, no, it definitely was timing, and also Mickey Most got a hold of her, and he said, "You're gonna be huge in the UK. I'm bringing you over there," and he was not wrong. I mean, she had, I don't know if it was two or three number ones, and you know, a few other top tens.
Yeah,
and of course, did the legendary shows. You know, wearing all the leather and just being this really cute girl on the outside, but being so tough as nails as well is just kind of it was an interesting juxtaposition.
And you know what? She's still going strong today. She's
I know. She's lived in Australia for many years, and she just released an album.
Yeah.
And you know, for her age, she looks great.
No, she's doing it, and that's fantastic. You know,
it's kind of weird that the only time she broke out in the U.S. was with that song she did with Chris Norman, Stumbling In, which
sounds
nothing like what she had done prior.
Yeah.
I guess the timing was right for that song back in 79 when they released.
Yeah.
The other CD compilation I bought is this British Beat collection of BBC performances. And it's not by all the usual suspects. A lot of very obscure bands on here. along with some bigger names, but like Warm Sounds, Elmer Gantry's Velvet Opera, Tomorrow. Who else do we have on here?
Is that on Cherry Red? Who's that on?
This is not a Cherry Red box. This is what is the name of the label? Looks like it's Time Box, which is interestingly enough the name of one of the bands that was big in the UK. So this is a lot of kind of pop psych. It's got a list of the acts, or some of them. Warm Sounds, Pinkerton's Colors.
Yeah.
Who had a hit with a song called Mirror, Mirror in the UK. The Bunch, Scaffold, Blossom Toes, which was a big psychedelic pop band there. Orange Bicycle, another psychedelic pop band that, you know, got rediscovered later on and collectors loved them. Mirage, great pop band. Tomorrow, the band with Steve Howe, who joined Yes eventually. Spectrum, The Gun, Earth, who I'm not even familiar with. Love Sculpture with Dave Edmunds. Junior's Eyes, another band I didn't know. Locomotive, Cartoon with an E, which had some Jimmy Page involvement. I think he produced it. Fat Mattress, Flaming Youth, and many more.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was pretty cheap. It was 21 pounds. I mean, not cheap, but £21 for a 3-disc.
That's amazing.
All this very cool BBC stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to get that. Rena actually found it over at HMV and said, you know, do you have this? And I was like, no, I don't. So I do now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a cross-section of many things. And we still have some record shopping to do. Tomorrow we're going to Stonehenge to do a little tour. Well, when I say little, 6 hours. So that should be a lot of fun.
I've never been to Stonehenge. So whenever you get there, will you let me know if it's actually as big as what they did on stage with Spinal Tap? Or is it really, or is it actually much bigger? Let me know.
I will definitely do that. Yeah, so we have that tomorrow. Friday. I'm not sure what we'll be doing Friday, but I know what we'll be doing Friday night, and that's going to the 100 Club to see Len Price 3, one of my favorite mod bands, and one that has played IPO Liverpool a few times, not this year, so I'm really glad to be able to see them. So we're going to have fun doing that. Saturday we may go down to Brighton to walk around the water and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, there'll be more record shopping in between. But, man, I am going to have – both Rena and I are going to have to send a lot of stuff back, which means we're going to be paying through the nose. But it's either that or pay through the nose at the airport even more.
Right, right.
Not to mention having to lug, like, 70 pounds worth of stuff. So – we've got it. Yeah, we're going to have to divest ourselves of some of this stuff before we go. And wish us luck. We have to take a COVID test on Sunday. You can't get back into the U.S. without a negative COVID test.
Now, and we might be broadcasting live from London next Wednesday.
Yeah,
more purchases.
Very possibly. They make you take it within 24 hours also, which seems, I mean, that's, it's a little bit extreme. They could have given you like 72, like they used to, but for whatever reason, the U.S. is being very strict right now, especially with people from the U.K. and, well, I'm sure other countries, like, you know, a lot of the Far East countries, is probably even harder. But we have to pass that, and, you know, if we do, which we should, we'll be heading home on Monday.
Yeah, cool. Well, hope you have a safe trip, and. You know, we don't have anybody scheduled for next Wednesday at this moment, but
we might.
We'll let everybody know.
And we do have somebody scheduled for June 8th.
June 8th, all right.
He wrote a really nice article for rockandrollglobe.com a few days ago on IPO Liverpool. His band Circles played the festival, and he's been just a really – really big supporter of IPO in general. Really great guy, excellent musician. He had a band called the Lilacs who played, who were, you know, fairly known in Chicago in the early 90s. They were part of that whole Jim Ellison material issue scene. Main guy who's going to be our guest, he knew Jim very well. He owns one of Jim's guitars, which I believe he played at IPO Liverpool with his band Circles this year.
Wow.
His name's Ken Curson, and he's the publisher of rockandrollglobe.com. He's a musician. He's just a really cool guy, and cool. I'm sure he's going to have a lot to talk about. So we'll have him as a guest on June 8th. We don't have any other guests lined up. It's like I said, I've been so much busier with IPO lately that I just haven't had the time to find other guests, but you know, we will.
We keep throwing the darts, and we're coming in the summertime, and sometimes it could be a little difficult. People are now out playing and they're doing things, and it's not like it was. I don't think it's quite as easy as it was during the winter months or pre getting back out there. But you and I are always trying. We're trying to line up interesting guests. So if you're not a member of this Facebook page, join it. Join over at Material Issues on YouTube, and then you'll find out who's coming up. Because you may not want to miss it live, because you have the opportunity to ask a question to some of these people. So join us. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Definitely join us, and we will have guests again in the future. But if when we don't, Mark and I always have a lot to talk about. That is never a problem. And I'm glad that we had a chance, or I had a chance to review IPO Liverpool and talk about some of the purchases and all that. It was fun.
Cool. Yeah. Indeed, it was great.
So great, you're not feeling well. I hope you feel better soon. I hope it's not the COVID.
Yeah, we call it the COVID now.
Yeah.
I graduated from the University of Ohio State. The Ohio State University. No, it's the COVID.
It's the COVID. So hopefully you don't have that. But whatever it is you do have, I hope you feel better soon. And
rockin' pneumonia and the boogie-woogie flu.
Now that may be what you have.
It's all good. Well, David, nice talking to you, my friend. Have a safe trip back to the U.S. of A.
Thank you very much, Mark.
We'll all be back here next Wednesday, same time, same channel.
It'll be 3 p.m. for me next Wednesday.
Yep.
Unless I don't pass my COVID test, then you're right. It'll be 11 p.m. as I quarantine in this hotel for another 10 days. But no, I think we'll be good, and we'll be back. I'll be back to my normal time.
Cool.
Jet lagged, but normal.
But normal. It's all good. All right, everybody.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
All right.